Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll hear from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard about steps they are taking to ensure diversity in the force, and we'll get an update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on veterans issues at this year's legislative session. Joining me now is the Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. General Nash, thanks for joining us today in the studio.
Tom, thanks. It's great to be here in person with you today.
General, we hear your message every week on a lot of important topics, but I don't often get you in the studio so that I can ask you some questions. Sir, for those few Minnesotans that maybe don't know what the Adjutant General is or does, could you explain that to us?
Sure, Tom. My title is the Adjutant General, and that's probably what most people refer to me as that are in the military, but I'm also the Commissioner for the Department of Military Affairs, one of Governor Dayton's cabinet members, and who happens to also be our Commander-in-Chief and my boss when we're not deployed somewhere around the world. And so I'm basically in charge of the nearly 14,000 men and women that serve in the Minnesota National Guard, both the Army and in the Air. And we're located in 63 facilities around Minnesota, along with our two air bases, one in Minneapolis with the 133rd Airlift Wing, and one in Duluth with the 148th Fighter Wing. And we also have responsibilities in the Department of Military Affairs for Camp Ripley, which is a 53,000-acre site just north of Little Falls. It's also the largest employer in Morrison County. And certainly at Camp Ripley, it's the jewel for our military training in Minnesota, as well as for many interagencies that also use it for their training, to include the Public Safety and Highway Patrol, the Department of Natural Resources, the Department of Transportation, and other agencies that use it on a continuous basis.
And General, can you tell us how long you've been in the military and how long did it take you to get two stars?
Well, I was drafted, as you and I have discussed in the past, Tom, on after graduating from Mankato State University in 1972. I was lucky enough to have draft number 71, and they went all the way to number 90 that year. And so I had no indications in my life that I was going to join the military until I got my greetings postcard, like many of your listeners received back in those days. So my career started in 1972, and so you can do the math. I think I'll start 44 years in July. And so you asked when I received my second star. That was back in June of 2004, after returning from a deployment to Bosnia-Herzegovina.
Looks like it was a great run, sir, starting way back when, and now the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard.
Well, pretty soon I'll be getting it right after this many years.
All right, sir. Just briefly for our listeners, the Minnesota National Guard has a federal and state mission. You referred to the state mission earlier because the governor becomes the commander-in-chief on that side, but there's also a federal mission where you've sent airmen and soldiers overseas quite often over the last 4.5 years.
You're right, Tom. At one point in time, we had over 3,000 service members deployed, both from the Army and the Air National Guard. And we've been continuously deploying soldiers and airmen since, obviously, 9/11. Albeit today, as we talk, we only have about 200 that are deployed to places like Kuwait and the Sinai and other locations around the globe. But we expect that number will continue to be less than 500 in the long term, at least as far as we can see now, unless something happens somewhere around the world. And there are certainly possibilities that can happen with the world situations as you look on the map today.
And that's why we're always talking about training, and training in the Minnesota National Guard. You have to have everyone ready if they're going to be deployed. They want to do their jobs as well as possible and get home safely.
That's right. We always train for those deployments, but in our state mission, we just came off of a state active duty mission with our Black Hawk helicopters putting out fires in northern Minnesota, working with the Department of Natural Resources. And so we have our state missions that we also have to be prepared for all the time.
We're speaking with Major General Rick Nash on Minnesota Military Radio. Sir, I know that today you wanted to talk about diversity. And can you tell me why diversity is important in the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, first of all, Tom, when I came in 4.5 years ago, back in 2000 and, and 10 early 11, I set out six priorities for the Minnesota National Guard, and one of them was diversity. You know, we talked a lot about it for many, many years, but I didn't see that we were making a lot of progress. So it became one of my imperatives that an organization such as the Minnesota National Guard must do in order to attract and retain a ready and reliable and relevant force. And as I think any good corporation, any company, any organization knows, that your personnel are your most important asset. And certainly we've seen in those 4.5 years the demographics of Minnesota and our state and our nation change. I believe that we must continue to change ourselves and to adapt in order to sustain that quality talent and ensure our operational readiness and always be ready for our community, our state, and our national mission.
So, sir, is it your goal to have the Minnesota National Guard reflect the population as a whole in terms of the diverse nature of those folks that live in Minnesota?
I think in the long term, as we continue to work on our diversity and inclusion objective, I think we have to. As I tell folks and I tell our soldiers and airmen, we have to start looking like those that we lead and look like those communities in which we serve.
Well, that's certainly makes a lot of sense, sir. I understand, General, that there's a recent initiative to open up many of the previously male-only jobs to females. Is that going well, sir?
Well, you know, Tom, as you know, things have changed dramatically since your time and your era of the Vietnam War, when it was probably an all-male inclusive with very few exceptions for females who probably were in the service supply and in the nursing fields. And, you know, the Department of Defense announced several policy changes back in 2013 regarding women who serve in the military. And that included the recent rescinding of the what was called by the Secretary of Defense the Ground Combat Exclusion Rule, which prevented women from being assigned to combat units below the brigade level. But I always use the example that my most recent deployment to Iraq as the division commander of the Red Bulls, my security team was made up of both men and women operating the gun jeeps as I traveled around on ground in southern Iraq. And I never knew as we got into the vehicles and took off and who was on the gun, who was driving, who was running the radio until we ended the mission and we got out. And the service members would start taking off their kit and their gear and their helmets, and you'd find out that you had a female driver, you had someone that was on the 50 caliber. So women, in my mind, were in combat. At that time, we also had 24% of our division headquarters was made up by women serving in all from the junior enlisted all the way to senior staff. And as I tell individuals, we could not have accomplished our mission if it wasn't for the women in the 34th Division.
And General, we've had a lot of your female soldiers and airmen on the show, and I've asked them the question about the opening of all these jobs. And most of them said they were pretty happy in the jobs they had, but the second part of the response was they were pretty glad that the choices were wider now.
Right. You know, you know, with the changes that have happened, you know, we in Minnesota National Guard signed up to be a proof of principle for the combat exclusion rule, and the 1st Armored Brigade, and you've had members of their team on before, we became a test bed, if you will, to start looking at incorporating women into those key positions. And in July of 2014, we had 292 leadership positions that were then changed to allow women into the units. And 31 of them have been filled as vacancies became available. And in 2015, we had 489 lower enlisted entry-level positions that allowed female soldiers. And we've already filled 47 of those up to this point. And back in 2014, you know, less than 9 months ago, three female officers and eight female NCOs were assigned positions that were previously closed to them. So we've made progress ever since we've rolled back the combat exclusion principle by the Department of Defense.
And is that working pretty well? Are your airmen and soldiers taking to it quite nicely?
Well, you know, we started out by putting women in leadership roles so they could be there, set the stage condition. We did a lot of training with the units because in an all-male unit, having a woman coming in a leadership position was kind of a change of culture for them. So we had to do a lot of training with our units. But we've been able to develop and implement some courses of action that have proved to be very worthwhile. And now these younger soldiers coming in have a senior enlisted soldier or an officer to look up to mentor, to train, to advise, and to assist. And that's, I think, has proved to be very beneficial as we start going down that road of having all positions in the Army opened up to females.
General, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk more about diversity in the Minnesota National Guard. We're speaking with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking today with Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash, and we've been talking about diversity in the Minnesota National Guard. And, sir, we were talking about some initiatives to open up previously male-only jobs to females. Can you give us some examples of some of your soldiers and airmen that you've placed in leadership positions?
You know, Tom, I'd be certainly happy to talk about that and very proud of the changes that have been made and opportunities that we've given to our soldiers and airmen. You know, just recently we promoted Brigadier General Dave Hamler, a colonel out at the 133rd Airlift Wing, who's a dentist. He's a doctor. He does facial surgeries, works for a large local health hospital, but he's also the first African-American general in the history of Minnesota's National Guard. We also have a first ever brigade level commander, Colonel Joe Clyborne. And we have someone that I think your listeners would be astounded at. And I want to give an example of a few of those. Captain Tara Robertson is the first female to take command of a previously all male unit. And she made history as the first female to complete the Bradley Commander's Course. Not only completing the course, but achieving the highest score of anyone in her class. And she was also recognized as the Distinguished Honor Graduate in a combat arms-centric course historically attended by only men. We have a Major Sarah Witt, first officer in charge of an all-male battalion of our headquarters company, 334th Brigade Engineer Battalion. And we have a Captain Rachel Terrett, first female executive officer in the 1st of the 94th Cav in Duluth. Captain Amber Mankey, commander over at the 34th Infantry Division, received the prestigious General Douglas MacArthur Leadership Award for 2014, and she's also recognized by the Minnesota Humanities Center with the Veterans Voice Award, which recognizes Minnesota veterans.
And General, for several years, I had the pleasure of being able to talk to your Command Sergeant Major, Cindy Colbert.
You're right, and she's been on your program for about the last 3 years, and she has just recently retired. In fact, her husband's coming home from a deployment in Kuwait in the next 2 weeks. And she has had the distinction of being selected as the first female senior enlisted advisor for the state of Minnesota in the National Guard and was responsible for overseeing those 14,000 soldiers and airmen I mentioned earlier that serve across our great state.
Sir, Minnesota has some unique diversity with a significant population of Hmong and Somali citizens. How's that affecting the population of the Minnesota National Guard?
Well, you're right. I think it's well known in Minnesota we have the largest Somali population outside of Somalia. And we have an individual that enlisted in the Minnesota National Guard by the name of Sergeant First Class Mung Hur. And we promoted him just recently in 2015 as a senior NCO. And he is a Hmong and has been in Recruiting Retention Battalion top recruiter. He's done terrific work in representing both the Guard and the Hmong community, and he's also the top recruiter this year in total recruits into the Minnesota National Guard. And going to your Somali question, we recently conducted a Somali professional development event with Professor Hamid Samatar. He's also a professor of international studies here in McAllister, and he presented a program that was titled Somali Americans in Minnesota, which discussed why Somalis are coming, first of all, to Minnesota and the opportunities and the obligations of the Minnesota Somali community to many of in our leadership. This forum was a presentation that provided an opportunity for our service members to learn about the growing population of the Somali Americans here that live within our communities and how we can work and learn from one another.
And, sir, it looks like you've been making careful, steady progress with your diversity program over the 4.5 years that you've been the Adjutant General. And I would imagine that, that deliberateness has allowed your soldiers and airmen to take to it quite well.
Well, it was a slow start, as I mentioned. You know, it started 4.5 years ago, but we're really seeing the results of that. And great work has been done by a recruiting and retention battalion. And, you know, back in 2011, you know, we reached out to the American Indian population across Minnesota, and 135 members joined the Minnesota National Guard. And in the African-American community, each year it's grown. In 2012, we had 109 enlistments, 162 in 2013, 193 last year, and already 137 in 2015. Our Hispanic population has also reached out to the Minnesota National Guard for a variety of reasons, education being one of those, and just selfless service and being part of the community. And in the last couple of years, over 100 have joined the Minnesota National Guard throughout Minnesota. And so far this year, we're at 93 of that have a Hispanic heritage that have joined the Guard.
That sounds pretty impressive numbers there, sir. Are you, can you tell me what you're doing to educate and create awareness about the diversity within the Guard?
Sure. Tom, you know, I think your listeners would enjoy hearing that we continue our proud tradition of celebrating special emphasis observance months for all minority groups in Minnesota. We host or participate in outstanding events and activities that are designed to enhance our cross-cultural and cross-gender awareness and promote within our communities, but specifically within the Guard, to promote harmony and pride and teamwork and esprit de corps among our military members and their families and the communities in which they work. And I think any corporation that is looking down the road to incorporate that workforce to make a better Minnesota, I think, can learn from how we've advanced as far as we have with the deliberate process. You know, as you know, Tom, we're not like a corporation where you can go out and hire X number of any particular diverse group. They have to meet certain standards and policies in order to be a member of the military. So we can't grow by just taking 30, 40, 50-year-olds off the street and incorporate them into the military. We bring them in early, and then we have to train, and we have to mentor them. We have to provide them resources and leadership opportunities. So it takes a while for diversity and inclusion to take root in a military organization, but I think we're well underway in making that happen.
And, sir, it has to be the same today as it was when I was in Vietnam. When we went to training and we were deployed to a war zone, we were all soldiers or we were all airmen, and we didn't care what the ethnic background was. We were there to get there and get the mission done and get home safe. And you have that ability when you're sending people on missions as well.
You're absolutely right. And as I mentioned in my earlier comments of this segment, Minnesota is changing, and we want to be at the leading front of that. We want to provide opportunities for young men and women of different race and ethnic and gender. And I believe that they will find our doors open, and there'll be great opportunities for them to serve in their communities and the state and our nation.
Sir, diversity has to be something that not just within the National Guard, but within the community, has to affect how you interact with civilians today as well.
You're right. You know, we've reached out to many of the leaders in those groups that I mentioned earlier in the diverse organizations. We've reached out to the council generals, which there are a lot in Minnesota. And one specifically was the council general that is involved from Mexico. And Rick Aguilar from St. Paul, we reached out to in the Hispanic community, and we continue to do that. We reach out to the JCRC, where Steve Hunnigs is the president of the North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota chapter, and we look at how we can do things better with special observances and events in those communities. And these partners that we've come to have been very open about allowing us to speak to the youth and into the schools, into the communities, and into the family organizations that we're trying to reach.
General, on this show in the last 4.5 years, we've had all kinds of your soldiers and airmen on, but I remember one young soldier joined and within a few years became a helicopter pilot, and he said that without the Minnesota National Guard, he'd have never learned those skills. And, of course, you just used the example a little while ago about Doc Hamler became the first African-American general. For our listeners out there today that are thinking about maybe a career in the Minnesota National Guard, it's wide open, isn't it?
It certainly is. And whether or not they work for us full-time in the Minnesota Army or Air National Guard, which we have over 2,200 full-time employees, or they become a traditional citizen soldiers, skill sets that they can learn in the military are wide open, from transportation to medical to signal to engineering to truck driving to maintenance, skill sets that they can use in the civilian world. You know, I'll go back to General Hamler. One thing I forgot to mention is that Doc Hamler, in his spare time, after being a brigadier general and a surgeon, a doctor, a family man, is that he's also the bench doctor for the Minnesota Wild. So as I tell folks, why we have the best-looking NHL hockey players in the league is because Doc Hamler does such a great job when they need stitches.
General, you've got a lot of good men and women in the Minnesota National Guard. We've just got a few seconds left for those our listeners out there thinking about a career in the Minnesota National Guard. You've always got people retiring and moving out, and you keep having to fill in on the other end with new, bright, young, smart people, don't you?
We do, and we probably enlist 1,700 to 1,800 new members every year, both in the Army and the Air. And that's just because of the turnover where individuals finish their first enlistment or they retire. And so we always are looking for new individuals, new opportunities that we can provide to them to support their communities, to take advantage of the educational benefits that are available, to learn new skills, and just to be part of the Minnesota National Guard and be something larger than themselves.
General, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for our listeners?
No, Tom. Again, it's great to be in studio with you. The time always seems to be fleeting by. And as we mentioned earlier, I'm not sure where the last 4.5 years have gone since you were the brainchild of this program and now covering 23 stations across Minnesota, carrying the word out not only to our service members, active duty, reserve component, guard, reserves, but also to our veterans, the over 340,000. And I think I cannot say enough the valuable service that you provide in our iHeartRadio and this station, getting that message out each and every week, because there's always something new that I learned listening to the guests that you have in the program. So thank you, Tom, for this very valuable service you provide, and thank you for your service.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for joining us in studio today.
You're welcome. Thanks, Tom. Looking forward to doing it again.
Yes, sir. That was Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll get an update on the veterans' issues from this year's legislative session. But first, it's time for Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleto.
Today I want to spend a few moments recognizing fathers across Minnesota. These dads might be veterans, they might be currently serving, returning home from a deployment, or they might have suffered the loss of their son or daughter in service to this country. Whatever your situation, I want to thank you for the role you have played in the lives of our children and families across Minnesota. Actions speak volumes about love and commitment, and simply being there sets the example and grounds our children. This Father's Day, I encourage dads to spend time instilling the importance of service and volunteering to the community, to those in need, and to this country. This is the time to demonstrate to our children the power of serving others. Not only does it help our children grow and develop into generous and caring adults, it also gives back. On behalf of everyone here at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the veterans across this great state, best wishes for a wonderful and meaningful day of celebration.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelleto. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Mike McElhenney, who currently serves as the Legislative Director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. He joined the MDVA in November 2010, and his current responsibilities include oversight of the department's legislative agenda with direct influence with all veteran legislative initiatives and liaison to the veteran service organizations in Minnesota and the National Association of Department of Veterans Affairs. Mike, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Tom. Great to be with you again.
Mike, it's springtime in Minnesota, and it means we hope the legislative session is over, although there's a special session coming up. How did we do this year?
Well, Tom, overall, first of all, you're absolutely right. There's still talks going on. There's some bills out there that didn't pass that are being negotiated as we speak, and there are a few initiatives within them that are relevant to veterans. But overall, veterans did very well again this year. The legislature, the executive branch, has always been very supportive of veterans' issues, and we once again got many good bills passed.
And Mike, it seems you're on the show once or twice a year to give us an update on what's going on. There's always some hangover from the previous year and the previous years, and always some things that you're working on to get through. Were there some of those this year as well?
Yeah, Tom, there was. There was just a few that I'll highlight. One of the big issues, veteran-owned small businesses. Veterans have been trying to get to a point where they can be certified, have their businesses certified within the state to conduct business in the state without having to go through the larger and more cumbersome process of being certified at the federal level. And law passed last year to do that. However, there was no funding to provide the necessary capacity and people to actually conduct those certifications. So this year, the Department of Administration went to bat with us and ensured that they received funding so that veteran-owned small businesses can be certified. And we'll be working on that in the near future to actually establish that process, get it set in stone, and getting the word out to veterans so that if they want to conduct business here in the state of Minnesota without going through the federal VA certification process, they can do that.
So now you'll have some people and the proper mechanism in order to get that certification.
Absolutely. And that's something that veterans have been working on for quite some time. It's had, I'd say, by and large, bipartisan support. And I think we're just about there and ready to go. In the interim, we've also been still following up with some veteran housing issues from past years. One of the initiatives or bills that passed 2 years ago was some funding to conduct studies around the state to see what the veteran housing needs are. And so the department has been working on that in the interim, and things kind of slowed, I'd say, a little bit on that during the legislative session, and that's to be expected. But there's been some forward movement on that. And so that's just one of the things I would highlight as still following up or a lingering issue from previous sessions. And then the last thing I would highlight is veterans' preference. There's been over the years, a desire to improve veterans' preference laws. They fall within our statute 197.46 and further statutes. And there was some work done by a lot of organizations this year. And forward movement is what I would say. I don't think we're completely finished with getting that where it needs to be in this day and age. But there's some good things that came out of it. There's specified language within the law that never existed before. So some pros have certainly come out of that change.
We're speaking with Mike McElhenney, the legislative director for the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Mike, what are a few of the new laws that that will help better the lives of our veterans this year?
Well, Tom, I'll just briefly run through Senate File 5, which was the omnibus bill on higher education. There's a new program that was established which will provide funding for a pilot program to get veterans into a short training course, an 8-week course, to teach them agricultural skills. And the intent behind that is to employ veterans that are in the rural areas. And this pilot program is going to start off in Mankato. It's a 2-year, they've got the funding for 2 years. They'll start it in Mankato. They'll move a second program into the 7-county metro area, and then they'll establish 5 more programs within the outstate, and those areas I think are still to be determined. But the intent is to teach some quick skills to veterans so they can get right back into employment after they return.
And I assume that was something that you've established a need for and justified to the legislature, that there were plenty of veterans out there that wanted that help.
Absolutely, and that's it's something we've heard in various forms over the years, but it really all came to fruition this year in education, and a variety of players had input on this. And again, it received bipartisan support. And so that's a good bill that's passed. The governor also signed the Health and Human Services Omnibus Bill, and there was some funding within that for Stearns County specifically. There's a facility up there known as the Eagles Healing Nest that provides services. It's kind of a non-traditional housing establishment for veterans going through issues, but they've received some funding up there to make life better. There was some funding established for the Southeast Asian Pacific veterans born before 1965 that are not able to receive some of the benefits that are established elsewhere in law. So that was a new grant funding established. Public safety, we saw a new provision relative to firefighting experience. We've seen in the past where post-training and policing has been accepted if you are licensed or have experience in other states, reciprocity. And so this essentially does the same thing. If you're a firefighter, if you have firefighting skills within the military, you could take a test. And when you get out and receive a DD-214, you've pretty much met the mark for employment here in the state. Another big bill that we were tracking very closely, of course, is the agency funding bill, which touches many veterans around the state. And I will tell you, we received everything we had hoped that we would. Again, bipartisan support across the board. And some of the specific areas within that bill are funding for the veteran service organizations, and that's ongoing. It's always been in the bill. Minnesota's Assistance Council for Veterans provides assistance in a variety of areas besides just homelessness, receive their funding. There's funding within that. And when I say funding, I'm saying this is money specifically for these programs that the agency cannot touch or move around. And the Honor Guard funding was there. We've seen a lot of work over the years with that. There's funding for the Gold Star program. That's a great program. Receives great support around the state. And it's something the agency really wants to see ongoing. So that's been supported and funded. County Veteran Service Officers, we were able to establish a grant, and they've had grants over the years, and they've kind of evolved into this this program that we have now. So there's funding for them. One of the big things that the agency wanted to do was to get grant-making authority with the Support Our Troops Fund. As you know, we receive some of the funding from the sales of those Support Our Troops license plates, just as the National Guard does. But we had a little bit stricter control over what we could spend those funds on. And so what we really wanted to do is kind of match what the National Guard's doing so that we can be more, do a better job in assisting veterans in the outstate area and show the public that, you know, we thank you for these license plate sales and the funding that we receive, and we're able to work better now with the public, I think, and putting those funds back out into the state.
Mike, we have to take a short break. We'll be back with more from Mike McElhenney, the Legislative Director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, in just a moment. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lanz, and we've been talking to Mike McElhenney, the Legislative Director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, about all the activity in the recent session of the Minnesota State Legislature. And Mike, you were talking about a number of bills, and a lot of the veteran service agencies were in there, and as they are each year. And of course, the process here is that you work closely with the Commander's Task Force, and the Commander's Task Force is made up of the 9 federally chartered veteran service organizations, and they're up at the Hill pushing some of their legislation, and you're up there monitoring what's going on, and now we're getting a report of what really happened.
That's right, Tom, and I would just like to thank the Commander's Task Force and all the veteran service organizations for the work that they do. I mean, we think of them as our board of directors, if you will, and they have their ear to the street. They know the veteran community. They understand what needs to happen, and they put that agenda forward. And as you stated, I pretty much monitor what's happening and report back to them, and they take care of business. So it's a great relationship, and I really do enjoy having the opportunity to work with them and work for them.
And they were pretty active on Veterans Day on the Hill this year, weren't they?
They were. It was a great turnout, probably one of the largest I've seen in some years, and I just hope the support like that continues. They mean business.
Well, let's get back to the legislation that was passed this year.
Right, and we were just going through some of the state government and Veterans Omnibus Bill, which is where a lot of the appropriations lie for the veterans. And some of the things that I had mentioned were appropriations or provisions that are always in the bill. But there were a few new items, and we were just discussing the Support Our Troops bill. And, you know, one of the new things that also was in the bill this year was the Honor and Remember flag. And it kind of goes back to what we initially talked about, some legacy issues. That was a bill that's been pushed for quite some time, and that bill passed. And so there's a new flag out there. And it was a bit controversial, but it passed. We talked a little bit about the fact that there are still bills being negotiated, one of which is the legacy bill. And within that legacy bill, there's funding for the Big Island Veterans Rest Camp. And they've always sought to do improvements. A lot of veterans go out there, they camp out. That's where they conduct recreational activities. And so there's some funding in there to assist that place in some of the needed maintenance areas. There's also some funding within the legacy bill for Veterans Voices. Very good program. I think you were nominated one of these years. So kudos to you on that, Tom. The bonding bill is something else that's still being negotiated. And relative to MDVA, there's about $650,000 in there that we're seeking to fix the bridge out at the Minneapolis Veterans Home. I think a lot of folks have been out there and realized they have to take the long way around to get into the Minneapolis Veterans Home campus now, because that bridge it's old and it's in dire need of some maintenance. So hopefully that will be forthcoming. And so we're happy that that's being discussed. One of the neater items that we're seeing within the ag bill that we hope that passes in this special session is there's a provision that will allow the residents of the veterans homes, if they purchase a firearms or muzzleloader deer hunting tag, they can go and take antlerless deers without an antlerless tag. So that's one more thing that those veterans, the residents in those homes, will be able to do and get out and enjoy life. So that's a pretty neat provision within the bill.
If they can get out and about.
If they can get out and about. Now, there's a lot of volunteers. That's one thing people don't probably hear enough about, is the volunteers that help the veterans in the veterans' homes, from the service organizations, the auxiliaries. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of hours logged annually of people helping the veterans in the veterans' homes. So it's a really great relationship we have with the public. One last thing I would like to address, if I could, Tom, just for a second, is there were some issues with the veterans' homes funding that we heard throughout session, and that was one big concern for the department. Is we were kind of at a point where we were going to have to lay a lot of people off if the funding that we needed wasn't achieved. And one of the things that we deal with on a constant basis out there, like the rest of American society, is healthcare costs are going up. And that was one of the things that we were monitoring very closely. And much like any other organization, we look at what's happened in the past and we try to project and forecast the needs of the future the best we can. And we were very concerned. We had really flat revenues last year. And so what's not well understood is the state appropriation is just a little over half of the funding for those homes. We get a lot of federal money that comes in, and so they kind of it's a special relationship. You need one to have the other, and so we were in quite a predicament. And luckily, you know, I know the governor's office was aware of that. We made the legislature very aware of that, and it was just kind of it was a little tough there for a while. I was a bit worried that perhaps that funding wasn't going to come in, because there was some increases. We saw a 4.5% increase just in operational cost that we're truly concerned about. And so as we look to the future of our aging veteran society or population and the desire to have additional veterans homes around the state, it's always a dire concern for us that if we have problems paying for what we have now, we really worry about what might happen if we do expand. And we think expansion is the right answer. The federal VA says we're authorized so many beds. The commissioner would like to achieve that goal, but the funding is going to be needed in the future if we're actually going to endeavor to build an additional veterans home. So this is just one of the many ongoing issues that we're always dealing with and trying to do the right thing for the state's veteran population.
And we keep those homes pretty full, so you need the people there to help take care of the veterans. So that was very important.
They are, in fact, full. There's a lot of veterans. We're right about 369,000 in the state.
Mike, we're just about out of time. Where can our listeners go if they want to find more information about the new veterans laws on the books this year and find out what's coming up next?
Right. And thanks, Tom. Minnesota, it's actually mn.gov/MDVA. Anyone can Google that, and they can go into our website and look under the About tab, which will take you to the legislative updates. You can register on that website and receive those updates weekly. As they're produced, we produce a federal update, we produce a state update, and you can stay current on the information as it's unfolding for veterans.
Mike, been another interesting interview. I always enjoy finding out what happened at the legislature. Listeners, you can go to mn.gov/MDVA, and Mike, we'll look forward to seeing you this fall to see what you're up to for the next session.
Thanks, Tom. I look forward to it.
That was Mike McElhenney, the Legislative Director of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Joining me now from the flag line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard is Tim Leonard. Tim, welcome back to the show. Seems like you were just here.
It sounds like we were.
Well, I think you were here last week. We were talking about the Patriot Ride, and we're talking about the Minnesota Patriot Guard.
Yes, we were.
Let's start out with the Patriot Guard this week. What do you do, and where and why?
We do it for honor, dignity, and respect for our military.
And you go to some funerals, and you go to departure ceremonies, and you go to welcome back ceremonies when our troops deploy.
Yes, we do.
And with a lot of folks that wear vests and carry a flag and do a very patriotic act just to honor and respect those
honor,
folks going on.
Honor, dignity, and respect for our fallen heroes.
And hundreds of missions every year. And in addition to that, you also have a big annual event that we call the Patriot Ride. Information on that can be found at thepatriotride.org. And that's coming up when?
June 20th.
And you moved it this year. It's no longer in Ham Lake.
It's going to be at the Anoka County Airport, the Key Air, which is on the north end.
And room for a lot of folks.
Lots of folks. Lots of car parking, which we call cages. But
I understand that cage. I understand that. And then those things that you ride, those scooters.
The scooters, the motorcycles, there are plenty of parking this year for them, too.
So it's Saturday, June 20th. Registration starts at 9 o'clock. There's events all day for the family. There'll be food. There'll be games. There'll be all kinds of things. And if you've never seen hundreds, maybe thousands of motorcycles start up all at the same time, you better go see this because it's kind of fun, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And you've got some programs in the morning and the afternoon, and you've got a raffle because you're raffling off one of those fancy scooters.
Yep, we are. You know, the other thing, too, is remember, it's a family event out there. You can come out there, and even when the bikes are all gone and on their ride, there's still stuff to do.
And that raffle, if they want to get a raffle ticket, they should go to thepatriotride.org soon because there's a limited number of them.
Yep.
And it's not a scooter. It's a Harley-Davidson, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And it's a nice one.
Yes, very nice.
So get your $20 up, get in that raffle, and see if you can get one of those things. And Tim, if I win it, we'll have to give it away because I don't know how to ride those things.
Yeah, actually, the raffle is for more than just the motorcycle. If you didn't want a motorcycle, it's also $15,000 cash.
Ooh, I'll take the cash. So everybody, put that on your calendar. June 20th, the Patriot Ride, big annual events, lots of fun. Bring your family on out. And Tim, I got to come back to this question one more time. Who's eligible to be a Patriot Guard rider?
Anybody's eligible.
Now they have a good heart, a flag, they can get a vest. And then all they got to do is go to your website, which is?
mnpatriotguard.org.
And then just click and sign up, and you'll get emails about the events coming up. And all you have to do is show up and talk to the ride captain. They'll show you what to do, and you can be part of this great organization that provides so much honor, dignity, and respect to our veterans.
Yes.
Tim, I want to thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Tom.
It's Tim Leonhardt from the Flag Line of the Minnesota Patriot Guard. We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Mike McElhenney, Tim Leonhardt, Commissioner Larry Shelito, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week for a show from the state capitol during the dedication of the Minnesota Military Family Tribute. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.